Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. What happens when you're a doctor and you have a family full of neurodivergents? Well, you'll find out in my next episode. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage, and I'll see you on the other side. See you there.
I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't fit in. I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I'm joined with Dr. Mary Jones. Welcome to the show, Dr. Mary.
Hi, Reed. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here today.
Anyways, let's start off with why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I am a physician, a pediatrician by training. I am a wife, a mom of five. I am a life coach, and an autism advocate.
Right. So how do you handle such a narrow, diverse family?
Yeah, so I have I'm married to a man on the spectrum. I have a son on the spectrum, and several or three of my other children have ADHD. So how do I handle that? I would say it takes a lot of patience. It takes a lot of planning. And it just takes the ability to adapt to each day as it comes, and still have like a good routine in place for everyone.
All right. Now, I understand you are also a podcaster.
I forgot about that, Reed. Yes, I have a podcast on the Medical Health Mental Health Radio Network, and it's called the Dr. Mary Podcast.
How did you get into podcasting?
So I got into podcasting through a friend, a mutual friend of ours. Her name is Dr. Stephanie Holmes. She introduced me to the founder of the network that I'm on, Kristen Walker. And yeah, we just hit it off. And I never thought that I would be doing a podcast like ever. And talking to Dr. Stephanie and Kristen, they convinced me that what I had to say needed to be said in the way that only I could say it. And so I decided to give it a try.
And do you remember your first guest?
Yes, my first guest was Kristen Walker.
All right. Now let's talk a little bit about your practice. Do you handle your patients differently, those that who are on the spectrum, as opposed to those who aren't?
So let me think about that for a second. I wouldn't say differently per se, because I approach every patient and every family with the desire to help them as much as I can and to give them what they need from me. Now that can be different, if a child is neurotypical versus neurodiverse, or if a child has another type of disability, as opposed to no quote unquote disability. But really, treating all of my patients and their families with dignity and respect and meeting them where they are, I would say that I do that for every single person.
All right. Now, do you feel that more doctors should be trained on how to handle those who are on the spectrum?
Absolutely. And even, myself, I have gone back and gotten my autism spectrum clinical specialist certification just because I do have a special interest in working with families with autism. And so, even me, when I started doing this, I realized that, yeah, I learned about autism in school, residency, had been in contact with and treated families with children with autism. And it was more from a medical perspective and not as much from, someone who is going to be working with them specifically with their autism diagnosis and specifically wanting to advocate for them within their diagnosis.
All right. Now, how do you handle patients who come in who wind up being level three autistic?
Yeah, so the main thing is to get them as many services as we can as early as possible. Get them funneled into the system, the educational system, as early as possible. Occupational therapy, speech therapy, lifestyle of daily living therapy, anything that they are going to need to improve their quality of life, improve their ability to get educated, is what we strive for. And it behooves physicians to know what is available in their communities. It behooves them to know, at what age group, for instance, early intervention stops and the school system takes over. Advising parents, when they need to get a 504 IEP plan, how to go about requesting that. And so, over the years, we really aren't taught about this in school or residency. And so you just have to educate yourself and learn about it, in order to help these families advocate for their children. From young kids all the way into young adulthood, if they're level one without intellectual disabilities, they're probably going to go to college, or even a level two is probably going to work somewhere. And so getting them, helping them to learn as early as possible what's available to them, how to access services, is only going to improve the quality of life, of every level of the spectrum.
All right. Now, have you had clients come in who have sensory issues, and how do you handle them?
For sure. I do mostly telemedicine now. However, when I was working in the in-person clinical setting, several of the practices that I was working for were changing over to sensory friendly practices, with quiet rooms, sensory kits for not just autistic or kids on the spectrum, but any child that was neurodivergent that may need, that extra level of care. And unfortunately, that those were not the norm. And I would say most practices these days don't have that. And so, you have to improvise. If there is a child who is really, sensory overloaded, doing whatever you can in the office, turning off the lights in the room, everyone speaks quietly. Try not to have loud noises. Try not to approach the child, in a abrupt or a manner that could be seen as threatening. And I have had, children that would become, aggressive because they were afraid because of sensory issues. And just educating staff to this isn't against you. This is a defensive, protective posture.
All right. Now, would you recommend parents who have children who are on the spectrum to that they see you more often so you can check in on them, see how they're doing, how their health is doing?
So generally, unless they have a medical comorbidity, along with their autism, if they're, something that I would be more concerned about, that I would need to see them multiple times in a year, yes. However, if they are physically healthy and it's more their autism, I would say, unless you need me, unless it's a sick visit, spend more of your time accessing the therapies that your child would need than coming to see me for me to look them over and they're healthy. Because I feel like that once a year for, kids 2 and up, is fine. Because they're going to need to really be spending as much time as possible accessing therapies. And I know parents only have so much time to access, the most important things for their children.
All right. Now, you said you were a life coach. What got you into life coaching?
So I really wanted to do something that was going to help people and people with autism, their caregivers, family members, also women married to men with autism, like to really see where they are and where they want to get to. Like that's always been a fascinating thing for me, is helping people to set goals and then plan steps and make steps to reach their goals. And I believe that, anyone can have a goal. It doesn't matter, what your intellectual prowess is. It doesn't matter, culturally. It doesn't matter, it doesn't matter. You're going to have something that you want to accomplish. And so I just love the hopefulness of it. I am a lifelong learner. I enjoy taking on new challenges, and I felt like being a coach would really help me to help my patients and their families more. And with that, again, Dr. Stephanie, because I'm married to a man on the spectrum and have, lived that experience, I am pretty good at helping wives of men on the spectrum who are in crisis. And so that sort of naturally came out of the coaching training as well. So I
All
just
right.
really enjoy, helping people to look forward.
All right. And what kind of struggles have you seen your clients come across?
For families, so I really specialize and enjoy working with people in the Black community with autism, or that has a family member with autism. And I'm sure you know this, Reed, but Black children are diagnosed about 3.5 years later than white children. And other minorities too, but I speak specifically to Black children, but they are diagnosed about 3.5 years after their white counterparts, and they still, even after diagnosis, don't receive adequate services. And so, they end up underemployed, they end up in jail, they end up, not living to their fullest potential. And so that is a big problem, like helping or addressing this disparity. And so it's very common for, people to come to me and their child has been, diagnosed late, and now what do I do? And trying to help them and teach them to advocate for their child, or their family member or themselves is really important. And as far as like women married to men on the spectrum, it's, you can lose yourself in that, especially if you didn't know about the diagnosis until, after you married them, until late in your marriage. And there's a lot of hurt and a lot of, baggage there. And so helping them to, okay, who am I in this marriage? Who do I want to be? Where, what can I do for myself to, make the best out of the situation and, hopefully have a happy marriage, as well.
All right, let's talk a little bit about your family. Now, your kids who are autistic, do they have any hyper focuses?
Yes, so I have one son on the spectrum, and he does. He loves Marvel, specifically Spider-Man. He
Wow.
loves video games. He loves anime. And so those are definitely the things that really kind of float his boat. Like he loves and since he was like very, very young, like he had a fixation about Spider-Man, and he knows everything there is to know about every Spider-Man and every universe and every comic book. And yeah, he's like a walking encyclopedia.
All right. Does he have any sensory issues?
Yes, he definitely does not like loud noises. He doesn't really like to be abruptly touched. He says it's painful. It
Hmm.
feels like pins and needles. Eye contact is a big thing for him that we're working on. He says, that is really uncomfortable for him to try to look someone in the eye. Crowds are really a big issue for him. And I think it's partly because of the noise and the fact that he may accidentally be touched.
Right. Now, you said your husband is autistic as well. Now, does he have any hyper focuses?
Yes. So, anything that he is really interested in, he's hyper focused, but at working out, he's done multiple Ironman triathlons. He's done multiple over 100-mile races. He is also very interested in technology. Like anything technology, he really hyper focuses on that. He's always got a device, if he doesn't watch himself, or we're like, you need to put your phone down, you need to get off your computer, you need to. And so yeah, he is very and then he also has like he picks his skin a lot too. So that's one of his hyper focuses.
Now, what advice would you give to parents who are raising children on the spectrum or who are neurodivergent?
Oh my gosh, I would say that just meet them where they are, treat them like, that they're normal, because they are. It's a difference. It's not an abnormality. And just learn your child, learn what they need, learn their personality. And the most important thing, I think, is to be their biggest advocate. Be the person that they know, you and your other parent, be the people that your child knows has their back. Be their biggest champion, be their biggest protector, be their biggest advocate in every situation. That's the most important thing. And yeah, try to access services and do all those things for them. But if they know that you love them and you accept them for exactly who they are, what better thing could a parent give to their child?
Now, would you say getting an IEP early would be the best thing for their child?
Yes. Once you transition into the school system for services at the age of 3, if they're going to early childhood or education, at the age of 3, instead of early intervention. So there's early intervention up to 3, and then after 3, They can go right into the school system, and you should absolutely request an evaluation for an IEP, and the school has to do it. So as early as possible, and an IEP is legally binding. A 504 plan is not. So you want that legal document, and you're going to get many IEPs over the course of their school career. And so you want to follow along. You want to make sure, hey, our IEP is not working. We need to be evaluated for another one. The school system has a certain amount of time to get that evaluation done. And like I said, it's a legally binding document. And so that's going to save a lot of headache, because if the school knows that that child has an IEP, they have to follow it.
All right. Now I want to talk about another very important topic, and that is when should a parent decide either to homeschool or let their kid go away to school?
So I have done both. Currently, we are homeschooling. And I would say it's a very individual choice. It's a very, can be a seasonal choice. It can be like, they were doing great in homeschool, but now I think they need to go to traditional school, or the opposite. They were doing great in traditional school, and now I think I want to bring them home. And it just really depends on what's going on with that child and what struggles they are, having, as well as what goals they want to have. If, my son said, "Hey, mom, I want to go to school, traditional school again, because I want to participate in sports, or, I want to be in the STEM club, and meet other kids, and we do those things outside of school, like we have them in activities, but sometimes they want to go back to traditional school, or they want to come home. It's a family decision, and it's a very individualized sp family decision. And I would just say, just do what's best for you."
Now, you would you say that socialization is such an important thing while homeschooling?
Absolutely. For them and for the parent, it's like you want to have, I've got five kids. They're all different personalities, and they're all in different things. They all gravitate toward different things. And certainly my child, who, is on the spectrum, that is something that we specifically, for all of them, but especially for him, we pay attention to that. And he is in, he gets services even being outside of school. Like, he has a life coach. He goes to Peers, which is, a group where, he's in there with other children on the spectrum. But then again, he also, a few weekends ago, he and his brothers went to a weekend long anime conference. And so, we're involved in church. And so we really, make sure that all our kids, and maybe it takes a little bit of more effort for our child on the spectrum, but getting involved in social activities with other children with and without neuro differences.
All right. Now, what would you say is the most important aspect in raising a child on the spectrum?
Most important aspect of raising a child on the spectrum. Yeah, I would just say adaptability and learning them. I when we first so my son was diagnosed wasn't diagnosed till he was 11. He's 14 now. And even before he was diagnosed, like, I again, like other, black moms, like, I knew something was going on, and I'm a pediatrician, but it was like me having to advocate and finally say, "Look, there is something going on, and I need some help here." And so, getting him diagnosed, and then after that, like, being able to get him the things that he needed were only because, like, I know my child. I adapt to him. I understand him, even the things he cannot say for himself or voice for himself. And so I would say that is super important, is just always learning, being willing to learn them, because I have five. Like, it could have been like, okay, everybody's got to do the same things at the same time, and this is how it goes. But that wasn't going to go well for him. And so being able to give him the freedom to be himself within the system, I think has been like so important and so life-giving for him.
Now, have you talked to your kids about when they do go off to college that they need to self-advocate for themselves? Because I've learned that the hard way, that you need to speak up, otherwise you're going to fall between the cracks and you're going to fight an uphill battle.
Absolutely. And giving them, so I was talking about this with someone, maybe it was the la my on my last show, but giving them the language and giving them the tools to speak up for themselves. And even my children with ADHD, even my daughter who is neurotypical, like, they all need language to advocate for themselves and the confidence to do so. And so that is very important, especially if you have a child on the spectrum who may not be as verbal. Like, my son is level one, no intellectual disabilities, but I wouldn't say that if he wasn't getting services and if he didn't continue to get services, throughout the rest of the time he's at home with us, that he would not fall through the cracks, Reed. Like I have seen him just shut down and clam up and, not be able to, especially when he's overstimulated or in a new situation, and not be able to speak for himself, And so definitely, helping him now while he's at home with us, is super important for later.
And finally, where can people find out more about you on the web?
Yeah, so I have a website, drmarycoaches.com. I am on Instagram. I am on Facebook. So those are the main places that I'm on LinkedIn, Dr. Mary Holden Jones. So yeah, those are the main places that I can be found.
And that's it, everybody. I'm Reed Miles, and that was Dr. Mary Holden Jones, and I'll see you in the next one. See you there, everyone.
Cause
Yeah.